Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher, 8:06 on this Wednesday, September 18th. Chilly 39 degrees here in Old Town Park City, 42 in the Heber Valley. On the phone with us from the ABC Forecast, meteorologist Cedric Hayes, and it was cold walking out the front door at 6 a.m. this morning.
Yes, it was, Les, I bet. You know, it's kind of a shocker to believe this weekend it was summer-like. And this week, yeah, that upper-level low has made its way across the area, bringing big changes across the region. Of course, we dealt with all kinds of wacky weather on our Tuesday afternoon, from those strong thunderstorms with gusty winds, some hail, and some heavy rainfall, to the high mountain snowfall, to the gusty winds we had across the area. So it was a wild one with temperatures well below average, and we're going to stay that way today. As you mentioned, those temperatures starting off on the chilly note this morning in the 30s, the low 40s, and it's going to warm up, but just barely as we go throughout today. We'll look at partly cloudy skies. We'll call it partly to mostly cloudy skies at times, as we've got a few clouds moving in from the west. High temperatures, though, in Park City, we're going to be struggling to make our way into the low 60s this afternoon. And in the Heber Valley, probably around the upper 60s for highs as we go throughout the day. So, yes, another cool, well below average day expected across the region. As we go into your Thursday, look for some sunshine to return across the area. We'll call it partly sunny for the day. Temperatures, once again, starting off in the 30s to low 40s in both Park City and the Heber Valley, and they'll be a little warmer in the afternoon with a little bit more sunshine. We expect highs to climb right around 70 degrees in Park City, with highs climbing into the mid to upper 70s in the Heber Valley, but still just very pleasant weather expected as it goes throughout your Thursday. And as we wrap up the week on Friday, you guessed it, we'll call it partly sunny skies once again. Temperatures starting off in the upper 30s and low 40s, highs in the low to mid 70s for out there across the area. So again, very pleasant temperatures remaining below average as we go throughout the rest of this week. Now on Friday, there is going to be a slight chance of an isolated storm as we see our next storm system moving by, but the latest information on that next storm system now has the track of that system moving further to the south. So it now tracks it across Southern California and across Arizona. And if that track continues to hold, that means the best chance of rain with that system will be on Friday off towards the southern half of the state. So we may just deal with an isolated storm chance, but of course we'll keep an eye on that. But the good news is that system should move past us as we head into the weekend. So your forecast for your Saturday, lots of sunshine, chilly temperatures return with highs in the upper 60s in Park City, low 70s in the Heber Valley, and that's after morning lows back down into the 30s and 40s. And then as we go into your Sunday, more sunshine, but again, pleasant temperatures, upper 60s for highs in Park City and low to mid 70s in the Heber Valley. And we look to pretty much hold with that same weather pattern heading into the beginning of next week. So Monday into Tuesday right now, we're looking pretty good with some mix of sun and clouds and temperatures staying below average with 30s and 40s for morning lows and highs in the mid to low to mid 70s out there. So hopefully, Leslie, you're enjoying this fall-like weather here, because this looks to stick around at least for the next 7 to 10 days, which I don't think we'll have too many complaints about.
Okay, thank you.
No problem.
Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be checking in with Snyderville Basin Water Reclamation Executive Director Mike Lors. Later on, CEO, Hospital Administrator of Intermountain Healthcare, Lori Weston, talking about the 15-year anniversary of Park City Hospital, and longtime Park City residents Dana Williams and Sandy Kinter will have details on the upcoming 70s reunion. That's happening on Saturday, October 12th. Then stay tuned for The Mountain Life. Today's guests include longtime pediatric dietitian Jill Castle. She discusses her new book, Kids Thrive at Every Size, How to Nourish Your Big, Small, or In-Between Child for a Lifetime of Health and Happiness. Then local physical therapist and concussion expert Annie Howard of Happy Brain PT gives some important updates on treating concussion. The Park City Board of Education accepted Superintendent Jill Gilday's retirement yesterday. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports that Treasure Mountain Principal Caleb Fine will be her interim replacement.
Fine has worked in the district for 15 years as a teacher, coach, assistant principal, and now principal of Treasure Mountain Junior High School. He's also a Park City High grad. Dr. Gilday did not attend the Tuesday meeting, where Fine told the board he was grateful for the appointment and thanked Gilday for her service.
And it's honoring, it's humbling, it's an incredible job. The students we serve are priceless, and I know very clearly the charge, and it is to continue to move this district forward so that when we hand off to the next superintendent, We were handing off a district in the best possible position.
Fine was immediately sworn in and took the superintendent's seat beside board members to applause from staff. In an email, Fine referred Treasure Mountain students and parents to the school's two assistant principals during the interim period. He says Principal Ben Muller will handle 8th grade student concerns and Principal Isaiah Falau will work with 9th graders. Besides supporting teachers and students, Fine says his priorities include doing everything in the district's power to, quote, meet and exceed the expectations set forth in the Office of Civil Rights Resolution Agreement. During Gilday's tenure, she signed the agreement with the federal agency to resolve its investigation into over 180 instances of student-to-student harassment in the Park City School District between 2021 and 2023. The two parties agreed on steps to reduce discrimination and harassment. Here's Fine in a YouTube video introducing himself and his priorities to the district.
We know that all students deserve a school free of hate, harassment, and bullying, and it is our goal to do more and strategically address our shortcomings to better support all students. Racism, anti-Semitism, sexism, and all other forms of discrimination and hate speech have no place in the Park City School District because all students belong here.
School Board Vice President Wendy Crossland says the incoming school board will conduct the search for a new superintendent when 3 new members are sworn in this January. Gilday announced her retirement in a letter sent to staff Monday. After 6 years as superintendent, she plans to officially leave the district on January 31st of 2025. Crossland says the outgoing superintendent will be available through October 31st to assist in Fine's transition. After that, Gilday will use remaining paid time off until the official January 31st retirement date. Gilday was the highest paid superintendent in Utah. According to Transparent Utah, for the last 3 years, she has earned over $400,000 per year in salary and benefits. The benefits package includes a district-owned house in Jeremy Ranch, which Crossland says Gilday will move out of and the district will retain. Fine already has a home in the Park City area. In August, the K-12 charter school network Colorado Early Colleges named Gilday as the sole finalist for its top position. In a June cover letter, she expressed, quote, enthusiastic interest in the role and a willingness to relocate to Colorado. According to an attorney for Colorado Early Colleges, the Charter School System Board will vote whether to offer Gilday the job on Friday. Ahead of CEC's announcement, Park City School Board renewed Gilday's contract in a split 3-2 vote. The renewal was controversial as some parents and 2 board members requested a decision on her contract be delayed until January when the new board members are sworn in. It's also unclear if the school board knew Gilday was applying for other jobs in June. According to Gilday's contract, she is supposed to, quote, promptly notify the board if she applies for other employment. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
In the studio now with an update from the Snyderville Basin Water Reclamation District, I have District Director Mike Lures. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Let's start with the flush index, and that kind of measures the number of people we've had in town.
Sure. So for the month of August, we estimated that there were 197,549 visitors. And we've measured that in the way of visitor nights. And that's about a 30% increase over August of 23. So fairly significant increase, and that puts us up for about 10% for the entire year, just basically a modest amount.
Okay, but still increasing.
Yeah, increasing.
That's interesting, because
yeah.
I heard things were kind of flattening off. But
yeah, we have noticed our numbers are showing a fair number of people, like a 30% increase, and some of this is a result of maybe day visitors that are bumping up the wastewater flows, but not necessarily spending the night. So, our numbers and the chamber numbers aren't going to exactly agree because we kind of measure 2 different things, but they're both good ways of getting an idea of how many folks are in town. So we have noticed a slight change in the kind of the makeup of what all goes into that number.
Yeah. All right. You also keep your eyes on the weekly wastewater surveillance summary, basically just tracking the COVID numbers.
That's correct. We continue to monitor for the genetic material associated with COVID twice a week at each of our facilities. There are about 35 wastewater facilities across the state that assist the state's health department with this. And as most people probably are not surprised, but about 86% of those sites are in the elevated category, which is the highest category for the amount of genetic material they're finding. Here locally, Summit County, both of our facilities, the one over on Highway 40 and the other, Jeremy Ranch, are both elevated. Wasatch County is also elevated at their Heber Valley facilities. So COVID's with us, and it's, I think that's probably not a surprise to most folks.
Yeah, people also headed, you know, kind of to the southern Utah Moab area, and it looks like they're elevated there as well.
Absolutely, yeah. It's been high for quite a while. It dropped a little bit, and it's bumped back up now.
Hmm. All right, and people just calling it summer colds at this point?
I have several friends and family members that have had COVID recently, and most of them have had pretty minor impacts. One of my relatives, 75 years old, and she was put on oxygen, but she's okay.
Hmm. All right. Yeah. Let's see. We have talked about sump pumps. That was after the winter of 2022-23, I guess, when we saw record snowfall. Are they still a problem?
Yes. So sump pumps are those pumps that may be installed in your home that pump out groundwater from, you say, your foundation area, and is pumped into the sewer system. Well, that's a problem because that's clean water, and it overloads our system. So we have taken our efforts that we started about a year ago, and we're now continuing with those efforts. We're targeting certain neighborhoods kind of one at a time. Right now we're targeting the Silver Springs area. And we've sent letters to many homeowners and saying, hey, if you have a sump pump, give us a call. Let's take a look at it. And if it's connected to the wastewater system, we can help you get it unconnected, and we can pay you up to $3,500 if you qualify. If we find that you have a connected system in the future and you didn't take advantage of this, well, then we're going to ask you to disconnect it, and you probably won't get any help with it.
Hmm. So where's that $3,500 coming from?
It's coming out of our budget.
Because it costs you about that much to have to
Some of these sump pumps, and we've had homes that have up to four sump pumps, and they can pump a quarter million gallons a day into the system. So we're talking about lots of water. We're not just talking about 10 gallons here and there. We're talking about a significant amount of water, and we're seeing extra water at the treatment facility in the range of millions of gallons. So this is the reason that this is a very serious situation for us, and we're really asking homeowners to give us a call, and we can help them get those pumps disconnected, because, you know, while they may run all year long, other cases they may only run during the peak of the snow, you know, melt. It's all on a specific site, different, basis. But, this is something that we have looked at the numbers very hard, and the extra water that we're getting into the system is so great that we're worried about it overloading the pipes and the treatment facility, and we want to see if we can reduce it. You know, keep in mind, people say, well, clean water, you should be able to treat that. Well, actually, clean water in a treatment plant is a bad thing because it doesn't have any food for our microorganisms, and our microorganisms actually starve to death, and it can actually ruin a treatment plant. So, it's not only the extra hydraulic or, you know, gallons of water, but it's the fact that clean water is actually causing our biological population at the treatment facility to starve to death.
Yeah, so what do you do? I mean, what do you add?
Well, it's sometimes a real struggle. Right now, we're kind of in an off-season. Ski season's not going yet. And our operators are very skillful to keep these bugs alive, and it's a real challenge.
Hmm.
Yeah, but especially during the spring of the year, and we've noticed all summer long extra water coming in, and it presents a real problem for us.
Yeah, and where's that water coming from? Because it's been such a dry summer.
Well, we had, two pretty good snow years, and the groundwater is pretty well saturated. Groundwater's high. And especially if you have a home down in a low-lying area that maybe have wetlands nearby or lakes, that groundwater is still high, and these pumps are pumping 24 hours a day in many situations.
Yeah, Silver Springs is a good, good example of that, right? Where we've got the natural. What are some of those other areas, though, that you would look for?
Well,
first?
There's Park Meadows area that's pretty low. There's the lower part of Jeremy Ranch below the clubhouse area, kind of down the low area. So we are going to work on one subdivision at a time, because there's quite a few sump pumps in these areas, and and we've kind of worked with the homeowners, and then we'll go to another area. But this is a long-term effort of ours, and it'll take a while to work through even a given subdivision area.
Yeah. Now, would a property owner know they have a sump pump?
In many cases, they do not. You buy a home, you don't really think about it. It's never broke down on you. You kind of know this little things down in your basement, but you're not sure what it is. So in many cases, homeowners will give us a call and say, hey, come out. I've got something. I think it's a pump, but I'm not sure. Hey, we'll come out and look at it. We'll make sure that it's properly connected. And if it's not connected to the sewer system, great. But if it is connected to the sewer system, we will work with the homeowners to help them get it unconnected. So, many cases you simply don't know.
Right. What would be a clue that they do? They would see something, or they would hear something, or?
Well, certainly, if your pump stops working, you're many times your lower floor of the home can be flooded. But a clue would be is if down in your utility room or in your basement or in your garage someplace, you got this kind of well-looking thing with electrical cord going down into it. That's usually a pretty good sign you have some kind of sump pump.
All right, and when you say properly connected, why were they connected to the sewer system in the first place?
Connecting a sump pump of groundwater to the wastewater system has always been illegal. It is always contrary to the plumbing code and our regulations as well. So it's not just our regulations, but it's plumbing code. You know, in many situations, honestly, you know, someone puts in a sump pump because they have groundwater seeping into the basement, whatever, and someone looks at it and goes, well, it's kind of really easy just to connect to this pipe right here to get rid of it. And, you know, some of the folks that have connected these know better, and some of them do not.
Mm. Otherwise, you would have just, a longer pipe that would take it to your backyard, or where?
It could go your backyard. It can go if you have a gutter out front or a storm drain or a creek or, you know, it all depends on what you have nearby you. But basically, you would pump it into the area in which normal rainwater would flow.
Okay. Again, you do have some financial assistance, and people can contact you how?
So they give our office a call. It's, just the main office. The folks that receive letters, we have contact information there directly to our supervisors that are in charge of this effort. And, please give us a call because this is really something that is a big deal, and we don't want our treatment facilities to fail.
649-3993. Okay. Let's see. The district also received two national awards recently. Tell me about those.
Right. So we have two treatment facilities, and our employees and the folks that run these facilities have done a fantastic job. So we receive a national award for our East Canyon facility. That's the one located there in Jeremy Ranch. For 100% perfect compliance with all environmental permit requirements for a consecutive 20 years. And that's quite a big deal to be able to meet 100% of all requirements for 20 consecutive years. And then at our Silver Creek facility, we complied 100% with all requirements for a consecutive 21 years. So kudos to our staff for really protecting the health of the local population and protecting our local environment by meeting all of the requirements for a very long period of time.
Okay. Also, you wanted to let people know if people have a wastewater or sewer line crossing their property, they need to know that there is an easement that is associated with that?
Right. So wastewater is collected through a series of pipes, and this starts out in your home. So when you flush the commode, it goes into your plumbing, and then it leaves your home to a pipe that goes out to the main sewer line. That main sewer line could be in the front of your house in the middle of the street, or it could be in the alley back behind your house. And the ones that are out in the street are generally not a problem, but the sewer lines that are located in alleys, and certainly here in the Old Town Park City area, you see a lot of this. The sewer lines are located in alleys or between homes, and we have easements associated with those pipelines so that we can get maintenance equipment in there to clean and televised and make sure those sewer lines are operating properly. And those easements are often kind of out of sight, out of mind. People don't really think about them, and they plant trees and landscaping and put decks and things on top of those easements. Well, that presents a problem because when we need to get our trucks in there to clean and televise and maintain the sewer line, we have to tear all that out. And if you have an easement, or better yet, if you have an alley behind your house and you're considering putting a fence up or a deck or trees, give us a call and we can come out and show you exactly where the easement is so that you don't plant something in the easement that we have to dig out or cut down.
All right. So have you had an instance where you had to pull up a deck?
Many, yes. And we've had several that are pretty significant where people didn't, I mean, it was an honest mistake. They didn't know. And they would put a fence up and, along with full landscaping, large rocks. And unfortunately, you know, we have to get in there and cut that down, dig it out so that we can get trucks in there. And most folks are not aware that that those easements exist.
Okay, so are we really talking just Old Town area?
No. Hmm. No. Ironically enough, some of the neighborhoods up in Deer Valley, and even Jeremy Ranch as an example, we have easements in the alleys, and people will unknowingly plant very nice, large aspen trees and landscaping, and unfortunately, we have no choice but to remove that material.
Yeah, does that the roots wreak havoc with lines as well?
The roots can get in the sewer line, and we mentioned that. But the biggest problem is, you know, and this is the worst case scenario. Let's say that sewer line gets stopped up for some reason, and we need to get in there at 8 o'clock at night, and you have a tree and landscaping in the way. That prevents us from solving that problem. And in the meanwhile, you could be backing up into your home.
Oh, my. Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is, you know, we maintain the sewer lines just like the street department maintains the streets. And if we cannot get to the sewer lines because the right-of-way is blocked, and keep in mind we have manholes that we access the pipeline about every 300 feet. So it's not uncommon at all for folks to have a manhole located someplace in the alley behind their home. And that's our access point. If we cannot access that manhole, we cannot maintain the sewer system.
Okay. So usually landscaping requires some kind of permitting. Doesn't that go through the proper channels? Or?
We do not receive sign-offs on landscaping.
Okay.
You know, building permits we do, but not landscaping. You know, and a lot of folks is do-it-yourself type landscaping, mm-hmm. too. And there are some landscaping folks that'll come in and, you know, they'll do landscaping. And this is kind of after the fact, not necessarily when a new home's being built, because when a new home's built, we do see those plans. But it's usually an existing home that wants to improve their backyard. And that's when we generally have problems.
Okay, so if someone's planning to do some landscaping, just call you first.
Just give us a call. We'll come out and be happy to meet with you and show you where the easement is to save you some bucks.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
No, that's about it, Leslie. Other than odors, you and I were speaking earlier. If you have an odor in your home or business, it could be because you have what we call a dry trap, meaning you have an unused floor drain or sink or tub or shower, maybe on the top floor or on the guest portion of your home that you haven't used in several months. If the water in that trap, which is below the actual drain, dries up, you will get sewer odors into your home. So you can avoid all that by just, hey, every month or so, just run the water in a sink or tub or shower or a floor drain for just a minute or two, and that'll fill that trap back up with water and prevent the sewer gases from coming in your house. And don't forget the utility room drain where your furnace and hot water heater is. We see those drains frequently drying up, and since people don't really see those very often, that's where we get a lot of odors are from utility rooms that have a floor drain where the trap dries up.
Okay. All right, Mike. Thank you.
Thank you, Leslie.
The Intermountain Park City Hospital celebrating its 15th anniversary. On the phone with a bit of the history, I have CEO and Hospital Administrator of Intermountain Healthcare, Lori Weston. Good morning, Lori.
Good morning, Leslie. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you. So this is officially Park City's second hospital. As we know, the Park City Miners Hospital opened 1904, serving the community for about 30 years, then operating as a private clinic before it became a restaurant and bar and skier dorms. But let's talk about our modern hospital and the fact that we're celebrating the 15-year anniversary of the second hospital. It opened September 15, 2009, but it really took a lot of work before that. Can you talk a little bit about the genesis of the hospital idea?
Yes, thanks, Leslie, and thank you for having me. Yeah, the hospital, it's hard to believe we've been here 15 years, and it's even harder to believe that 15 years ago, the thought that there was a question that the hospital really needed to be here in our community. We can't really think about what it would be like if we didn't have it here today and how it has grown over the last 15 years and served this community and our outreach community so well over the last 15 years.
So was it after the 2002 Winter Games that we decided we needed a hospital?
I think it was in discussions before that, actually. I think there were a lot of discussions going on about patients that were having to travel so far for care, especially down the canyons through the weather. And I think a lot of people had become accustomed at that time to driving down the canyon to get care. And so bringing that here, I don't think people understood, you know, what that would look like if there was really a need and the difference that it would bring into the community by having a hospital here.
Yeah, so once the hospital opened, it was actually probably, what, half the size it is now?
It was half the size. We have been in a constant state of expansion since we opened our doors in 2009. When you come to the hospital, we've always got some construction project going on, continuing to grow for new services that the community is asking for based on what we're seeing coming in our doors and the population growth in this area.
So is there more room to expand, or are you pretty much done?
We've got a few places left to expand on the hospital right now. We are currently, and I'm maybe jumping ahead, Leslie, but we are in the design phase to expand another time. We are going to be expanding on the backside of the building. We will be expanding our ER, emergency room, trauma, and also our surgery, imaging, and lab areas. We have really outgrown those spaces. We will be adding trauma bays, pediatric ER rooms, and safe behavioral health rooms in that new addition. And then we will also be building out a cancer center. We've done infusions since we opened the hospital. We added chemotherapy this past year, and we will be bringing on at the end of 2025 a cancer center to provide medical and radiation oncology along with radiation therapy. And so we're excited about the new services that we're going to be able to provide to the community to keep them close to home for care.
All right. And as you mentioned, in addition to the emergency room there, Park City Hospital has also designated a trauma 4 center. What does that mean? And could it be better than a trauma 4?
That is a great question. We are currently a trauma level 4, and what that means is all of our physicians and staff here are ATLS certified, which is Advanced Trauma Life Support. And so patients will come in to us and we stabilize. And if we can keep them here for treatment, we do. If not, we stabilize and we send on to a higher level of care. We are currently looking at moving to a trauma level 3. We currently see patients that tend to be at that level, but that is something in our future as we grow to provide those services for the community. That just means that we have the resources and infrastructure in the hospital to take care of more acute patients.
Yeah, and what would those resources be? I mean, what would you need to add to get that level 3 designation?
A lot of it is surgery, what surgery we have in place, which is really general surgery and trauma surgery, and we do currently have that. A lot of the things that are requirements for that are in place right now, and we are working on the state really just to make it official, and we'll be looking at over the next 12 to 18 months.
Wow. All right. So, I mean, once you do that, I mean, would it be on par then, say, to your Murray Hospital? I mean, or are there other improvements that could be made to, you know, I guess to rival the Murray Hospital?
You know, that's going to take a lot of growth, which doesn't mean we can't get there. But the trauma level three, there's five levels. And then there's a trauma level two. The Murray Hospital is a trauma level one. And at that level, you really have to have heart surgeons. You have to have neurosurgery for the brain and those other types of support services at the hospital. So the future may get us there, but right now we will be striving for that trauma level three.
All right. Now, while babies are born now back at the hospital, what about premature births? Would they need to go somewhere else?
Yes, usually we will take 34 weeks and above, you know, on planned deliveries. Of course, if we have someone walk in labor with a premature baby, we will get them to a higher level of care if that is needed. But we do have neonatology services by telehealth here on site, along with a neonatal nurse practitioner who keeps our teams trained on neonatal care here at the hospital. So we can really get any patient to the care that they need based on the circumstances.
Okay. And then would you designate it primarily as an orthopedic and sports medical facility, or do you see much more than that?
We really are designated as a community hospital that really has those core services with general surgery, urology, ENT, dermatology, and those types of, and we also do plastics. Orthopedics is a big part of what we do, especially with the trauma that we see in our area with everyone that is so active. We've got a lot of people coming into the community to recreate and have a healthy lifestyle. So orthopedics is a big part of what we do. And as everyone in town knows, we've got wonderful orthopedic partners here at the hospital that we work very closely with to provide that excellent care. But we really provide the full spectrum of services that a medium-sized community hospital would provide.
And I remember when we were first talking about the hospital, I mean, there were a lot of jokes being made about, oh, this is going to be kind of like the place where people would come from out of state to come to beautiful Park City and have their plastic surgery done, you know, and rehabilitate here. Has that been the case?
We do see that, but we see that across all service lines, to tell you the truth. You know, as you know, a lot of people are coming in and out of our community. And with the reputation that a lot of our surgeons have are world-renowned, and they will seek out certain surgeons for that care. So we do have a wonderful medical staff here, highly trained and great expertise with a great reputation. And so we do see patients that will travel for care and come here to get that care.
Okay. Now, Intermountain is a nonprofit organization. Does that make it easier to build hospitals because you can rely on donations and family foundations and things like that?
It is definitely not easy. And nonprofit doesn't mean that, you know, we don't make a profit. What our profits go to is to, one, give back to our communities, invest in our buildings and infrastructure and resources to make sure that we have what our patients need when they come to us. We do depend heavily on philanthropy funds to help us build and accelerate services that we bring into the community. We couldn't do a lot of those things without it. So it definitely does not make it easier. We don't have stakeholders as a nonprofit organization. We have a community and a board that we report to that we have to be financially viable for.
Mm. And I guess other than off the top of my head, I think about the Blair family who sponsored the Blair Education Center. Are there any other naming rights in the building, and is that helpful, I guess, to have those?
Yes, so we have multiple individuals in the community that have helped us build certain things in the hospital. I don't have that list in front of me, but the Blair Education Center, the Grundoffers have been some of those recently that have helped us either put in a unit in the hospital, expand wellness and prevention services especially to our most vulnerable populations that can't afford care or don't have insurance. But as you walk around the hospital, there are different units here in the hospital and equipment that have been named by a lot of our generous donors in the community and honestly outside of the community as well that have wanted to have this care here and they want it available to those that are in our community and visit our community.
Okay, and then I got to mention the hospital cafeteria is still one of the more affordable places to eat in town. Is the kitchen still getting great reviews?
We are. Our chef was recently recognized, Vanessa Kibble, in one of the articles, magazine articles here in the community. But we strive to be at the same level as our wonderful community partners here in Park City and provide excellent food and service just like everyone else does.
Okay, and finally, do you have any public celebrations planned?
We do have some celebrations going on. A lot of it is internally with our caregivers and some of our staff and key philanthropists that we work with, but we will be doing a celebration for the 15 year, and then we will also be holding health fairs throughout the next year as well.
Okay, that was just at the hospital?
Yes.
Okay. All right, Lori, anything else you wanted to mention?
No, we're just excited to continue to grow and provide the services that the community needs. Our hospitals really are, can be considered a community anchor for the communities we live in. And we try to partner and invest in resources with others in the community to bring health care to the community and serve those that live here. So I really appreciate your time.
Yeah. You've been with Intermountain for how long?
I've been with Intermountain for 23 years.
Wow, okay.
Up in Park City for 13.
Yeah, and the hospital, I guess, also a major economic impact because of just the number of jobs, right, that it employs, workers and employees.
Yes. Yeah, we try to do our part in hiring locally, buying and shopping locally, and just increase the whole overall economic landscape here on the Wasatch Back.
All right, Lori, I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Lori Weston is the CEO and hospital administrator of Intermountain Healthcare. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. It's been 15 years since the last 1970s reunion was held. It's a gathering of those who lived and worked in town at the time, a town that didn't extend past the golf course or to past the top of Daly Avenue. In the studio with details to give a bit of nostalgia as well, I have longtime resident and organizer of the event, Sandy Kinter, along with former Park City Mayor Dana Williams, who was also owner of Ryan's Bar once upon a time. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Sandy, let's start with you and just get the details. The event's not happening until Saturday, October 12th, but you are hoping to get a critical mass to RSVP by the end of the month.
Oh, yes. We already have 230 RSVPs, and I know there's a lot more out in the Eve's waiting to see who's coming. It's been so long since everybody got together, and with all these memorials going on lately, it was the discussion that we should get together for a joyous occasion, and the plan was hatched.
All right, so it's happening Saturday the 12th, what time?
At 11 a.m., we hope to have everybody at the Alamo. Oops, sorry, no name. And between 11 and 12, and get in there. The capacity is 500, so we're hoping to max it out.
Okay. And there's no cost, but you are taking basically an RSVP of $10 just to ensure that people will show up to get to, you're hoping to get to at least 300.
I'm shooting for at least four, but okay. Yes, the $10 will go towards the staff and that.
Okay, how do people reserve that?
They can call me. Can I give my phone number? 808-634-7848. And I'm doing Venmo, or you can send a check. I've got some great cards. And or drop by and give me some cash.
Okay. And I know that it's called 70s Reunion, and you've had several people say that they didn't get here till the early 80s. So what are you telling them?
Well, if you want to hang out with all of us old farts, and you did back in the day, please do come.
All right. I know that you've had even kids reach out to you who were born in the 70s.
Oh, someone called in. I used to work with her mother, and I loved her mother, and she's since passed, and said, I was born in 77. I said, oh, please come.
Right. Okay. And they're coming from out of the woodwork and all over.
Oh, my goodness. I just got a call from Connecticut yesterday, but South Dakota, Pennsylvania, Colorado, Arizona, Oregon, Washington, California, Idaho, and Hawaii.
Yeah, awesome. So Dana, I think it in the 70s, you may have been living in Colville. Your family had made their way to Utah via Southern California.
Yeah, so my dad actually bought a Treasure Mountain Inn in 1964. And so we would live up here in the summers. And then my mom befriended Dolly Makoff and Norma Ivers. And she would call and say, you know, the gals and I have decided to have a scotch in every bar in Wyoming, so I'm not going to be home for a few more weeks. And we're like, okay, Mom. And then she was in the theater troupe at the Egyptian in the 70s, up from the 70s to the 90s. And then when they came up here full-time in 1978, they built a house out in Hoytsville. And then we had the bar on Main Street, and there was this character named Doug Ryan, who was the manager at the Alamo. And no name. And so my dad built the bar. He had bought that building when it was boarded up on Lower Main across from the Elks building. And Doug was going to run it. And I was in college in San Luis Obispo. And my dad called and he said, Doug passed away last night. He's gone. Can you drive out and open this bar tomorrow? And so I drove all night and we opened the bar. And you know, and we did things like we ran tabs for people, which I still have the Rolodex from 1980. And there's a lot of you in town that with interest owe me a hell of a lot of money. But I think we had $18,000 in IOUs when we closed the bar in 86. But, you know, interesting, kinder, gentler nation, certainly back then. And we really had no summer business. So we were all kind of broke and unemployed and happy. And, you know, you'd take a night off from the bar, and what would you do? You'd go to everybody else's. And so you'd start at the top of Main and then just lean your head a certain way and work your way down. And then you had the last chance. but very fun. And we were a very small town, less than 1,500 people back when we opened the bar. And so all the fact, we all knew each other. And there was miners, and there was hippies, and there was some the errant cowboy or two, and all kind of a similar dedication to town, working together and trying to figure things out. We used to play the cops in football every year, and it was Ryan's Bar versus the Heat, and cops never won, by the way. But and then we'd have a peace dance in the Memorial Building, which is now the Marquee. And so physically, the hippies would get beat up very badly by the cops, but we always won the games because they were a lot bigger than we were. But, you know, very very calm time, and I don't think any of us expected to see what happened then. And I love telling people about it because it's kind of like, you know, in those days, people visited us, but they didn't necessarily stay. And so our town was filled with the people who work here. And that paradigm's changed a lot over the years. But I always tell people, you know, be respectful of these people that you complain about traffic on because they still teach your children and protect our streets and serve you. And they're Parkites even though they don't live here anymore.
Yeah. So it was you and how many brothers?
Well, there were five of us, but there was only two of us, the Trout brothers. And I remember our ad on KPCW early on was Ryan's Bar. the lonely trout in your stream of consciousness. and we had a very fun, exciting time. God, there was a lot of brothers here in those days. There was the Otts and the Martinez's and the Workmans and the Williams and the Willies and the Rafados and we'd have our little bar. We had a pool table that wasn't coin operated, and we didn't charge for it, which our dad thought we were insane. But we do pool tournaments, and people would hang out, and the tournament would take 3 or 4 hours because there's only one table. But.
Yeah, let's talk just a little bit about your dad, though. I mean, because he was instrumental in KPCW. I think one of the original board of trustee members.
Yeah. And he was the original president of Community Wireless. Mm-hmm. And he was on the air the first 5 years. He did classical music. He sucked. But because he came from this business background where he had dictated. And so we'd be on the radio, and he would add punctuation as he... Beethoven wrote this comma, and da-da-da, and new paragraph. He was in the old station here, and then was in the Marquee, in the Memorial Building then. And it was interesting at that time because almost every building on Main Street, the second floors were apartments. Mm. So there's about 620-somethings and some younger that would get off work between midnight and 2 a.m. We just hang out on the street, and I think there might have been some illegal things that happened. But we went to the city and said, gosh, we have nothing to do, and we're all amped up after work. So can we have the keys to the Memorial Building so we could go shoot basketball for a little while? And they were thought it was so cool that the kids in town were taking control of things.
Sandy, I mean, how would you describe Park City of the 70s? I mean, I guess my biggest takeaway was the cops. You talk about the games and stuff, but they were so cool. I can remember not being able to get home because of a dog blocking my way. I walked down and they would take me home.
I moved here late in 75 and worked at Park West. And my favorite thing was when I got to start working nights, get up and ski during the day, and then go dance all night. And the Silver King opened, I was a happy girl. If there was no dancing going on, there was a line outside, they'd shoot me to the back door so I could go start the dancing. And I'd get out front, and there's Cliff Cooker or somebody to give me a ride home up on Daly.
Yeah, and I think we're gonna try and get Cliff back for the reunion.
Well, somebody has tried, and I'm not sure that he's going to make it back here. But there's Rolf Sandberg is coming. John Jenkins is coming. We're trying to get Bill Bertinoli. Some of these old-timers that are coming. It's amazing. And I have a Facebook page, and it's Park City 70s Reunion I started. And so somebody needed a ride, and so somebody got on, and they're going to give them a ride. So it's all getting connected. It's old Park City style. It's spreading like wildfire.
Okay, it is the same day as Shotski, so it's going to be busy on Main Street. Mm-hmm. Any recommendations for people might want to think about?
Mostly is maybe go to the resort and take the bus up to the bottom of Sweet Alley. Uber, taxi, that works. And a lot of people are just actually still living in Old Town. We're going to walk down. Carpool.
Okay. All right. Any other thoughts? Again, maybe the number one more time. People are interested.
It's 808-634-7848.
All right. Anybody you're especially looking forward to seeing?
Oh.
It's like naming your favorite kid. Never mind.
Right. My favorite kid is your kid, baby.
Okay, Dana, any other thoughts?
No, I think it'll be nice to see everybody. And they're an amazing part of the history. And so it'll be really fun.
Okay, Dana Williams, great. Sandy Kinder, thanks.
Thanks, Leslie.
Thanks, Leslie.
Well, Park City residents who may be curious about current and future local development projects can find out more at today's Fall Open House. The open house will be at Miners Hospital from 6 to 7:30 p.m. Park City Community Engagement Manager Linda Jager says it's one stop to learn more about all of the city's projects.
We are having probably at least 10 of our departments that will be participating: planning, housing, transportation, engineering, the water team, the recreation team, building, library, and also the Park City Police will be there. They're debuting a few of their new motorcycles, which will be out for display and maybe some photo backdrop opportunities.
Park City Planning Director Rebecca Ward says the open house will feature presentations on several key projects. She says planners will also be available to discuss projects headed to the Planning Commission this fall. Two of those include the redevelopment of the DoubleTree Yarrow Hotel with a public hearing on September 25th, as well as Deer Valley's Snow Park redevelopment happening October 9th. She encourages residents to attend and to provide feedback on the plans. With the City Council's approval of the Bonanza Park Small Area Plan, Ward says that the Land Management Code will need to be amended to implement the community vision for what the future neighborhood will be. She says those changes would loosen as well as update current regulations. The city will also introduce the new Neighborhood Advisory Committee's initiative, and Ward says they'll be looking for residents to apply.
What we would like to do through the general plan process, as we move forward, we'll have a community meeting where all are welcome. We also really want to go into each of the 10 neighborhoods that are identified in our general plan and hear from those residents on.
The city will accept applications through October 25th.